Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it never dies. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter, and with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And we are here to preview the semi-finals of the T20 World Cup. Jared, the group stages were lit. The Super 8 started off on a dull note and then they really picked up towards the end. And now we are here towards the business end of the tournament. The knockouts have finally arrived. How do you feel about this World Cup overall?
I feel like it hasn't quite taken off.
Hmm.
I feel like it's been good and we've all enjoyed it, but I don't think it's been a tournament where casual fans come in droves. Hmm. And I don't think it's a situation where it's going to be one that we remember forever, but I would say it's a good World Cup. Like I wouldn't say it's bad in any way. It just hasn't quite taken off the way that you would perhaps want it to.
Yeah, I mean, in the first week, I thought that it had taken off quite spectacularly, right? When the Netherlands nearly defeated Pakistan, Nepal nearly defeated England, and we were seeing the associates really, you know, punch above their weight, which was fantastic to watch, right? Of course, Australia got knocked out in the group stages. I thought that brought a lot of flavor to the T20 World Cup. But then the Super 8s did start off on a dull note. There were a lot of one-sided fixtures. Sure, South Africa defeated India and we got that crazy stupid game between Pakistan and England in which both sides were trying to out-stupid each other. But what would you say the most entertaining moments from a neutral's perspective were the double Super Over game between South Africa, Afghanistan. And then we also had a really crazy first innings in the West Indies-South Africa game where it was 6 dot, dropped catch or out. That was quite phenomenal. And then I suppose you could say the India-West Indies virtual quarterfinal was also quite entertaining. So we've had our moments, but I agree, we haven't had that one spectacular thing happening yet, which really makes this World Cup memorable.
Yeah, I think sometimes with these World Cups, that they come so quickly. We saw this in the Caribbean as well. But I think if you're having an Indian World Cup, you probably assume it's going to dominate the space a little bit more than it has this time. And, you know, and I think cricket fans have enjoyed it without being like out of their minds with it. But I don't know if it's gone anywhere else at the moment. You know, maybe if the West Indies game was the double super over game, right? Or, you know, maybe there was something else happens or that game was closer or there was another big game along the lines or... you know, Pakistan got Sri Lanka 9 wickets down for 140 or something. Do you know what I mean? Like it feels like it's missed a couple of knockout blows, but I still think it's been an entertaining World Cup just without maybe the greatness that some of the others have. That's what I mean. I think it'll be forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, the initial promise definitely hasn't been fulfilled, although we have had moments. But anyway, let's hope that the knockouts can provide us with something which really makes this memorable. And let's start with the first semi-final, of course. South Africa, who are still unbeaten in this tournament are the only remaining unbeaten team across this competition, they will face New Zealand at Kolkata, Eden Gardens. And this is an interesting fixture because for some reason, every now and then we get these semi-finals between South Africa and New Zealand. Like how many times have these two teams faced each other in the semi-finals in recent years, right? Like from the Grant Elliott game in 2015... to the most recent semi-final in which New Zealand knocked out South Africa in the Champions Trophy. I mean, I'm sure there are a few other ones. There's that quarter-final in 2011.
The FAF game where he's getting sledged by Kyle Mills as 12th man.
Yeah.
It does feel like they end up getting drawn against each other quite a lot.
Yeah, and this is interesting because, you know, pound for pound, I do think South Africa are the most strongest side and they are the most informed team in this competition as well. Like, they look quite solid, most bases covered. Eden Gardens, though, from what we saw in that game between India and the West Indies, it does favour the side which is chasing because dew eventually does come around. Plus, you know, the outfield is quite fast, the boundaries, square of the wicket are short. Are we expecting a high-scoring game in this semi-final or are we finally going to see some of that old-school T20 World Cup cricket where the scores aren't too high?
No, I mean, I think 185 to 205 seems about right. I haven't looked at the markets to see what people are betting on at the moment, but that seems about right, doesn't it, for both of these sides? You don't have incredible spin being bowled. You know, you've got two sort of good defensive spinners. You don't have a lot of attacking spinners being bowled. You've got seam heavy lineups, I suppose, overall. I think that's probably what you would look at. Certainly, as you said, the toss is a big part of it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be playing a very, very big role tomorrow, and both captains would want to chase because we have seen Dew come around in the second innings. Maybe right, like not right at
are
the start
using
of the second
the,
innings.
What's it called? The Dew cure spray?
Yeah, I mean, look, as much as they try, and I'm happy that they are trying.
I just don't think it
works. Yeah. It doesn't eventually, you know, bring about the results that, you know, the organizers or the administrators wanted to. Mm. But we've got a couple of super chats over here, which will help us drive the conversation. First, we've got Akshu835, who says, I've seen people describe New Zealand as a team with no big flaws, and you can't really say that when their fifth bowler is Neesham/Phillips/Ravindra. Throw in McConkey in there. They've been playing Cole McConkey as well. I highly doubt that Cole McConkey is getting a game in the semi, though, because they've moved away from Sri Lanka, and he was perhaps there in the squad because Colombo, the surface in Colombo suited having an extra spinner around. We've been saying this for quite a while, Akshu. I'm not sure if you've been watching Combox and Pro Sports, where we've highlighted that New Zealand have a fifth bowler issue. Jimmy Neesham might be a threat level 93, but we all know that he's past his prime. And
I don't think he was ever a threat level 93.
Jacob Duffy hasn't been playing much in this T20 World Cup. So when I look at New Zealand's bowling attack, Matt Henry with the new ball is going to be imperative. Mitch Santner has been brilliant, and he's someone who has evolved so interestingly over the years, both as batter and bowler, and throw in fielder and captain as well. Like, his evolution really needs to be a case study. I think he continues to grow from strength to strength. But apart from that, there are about 8 overs which you can plunder, right? Like, in theory, you can. Jacob Duffy, even though he's taken heaps of wickets in the build-up to this T20 World Cup, he hasn't been trusted a lot in this World Cup.
I can explain that to you if you want. He's a new ball bowler, and they've got Matt Henry. How do you bowl both of them, right? And we've seen this before when with Mumbai Indians, when they had Trent Bolt and Chahar. Was it Chahar? It's actually really hard when both guys need the first ball, the first over. Right? When both guys need the brand new ball. So by the time Duffy's coming on for his second over, it's the fourth over, and he's usually at least one over earlier in that. And you know, if you look at traditional T20 cricket, if the ball either stops seaming or swinging, usually by about the fourth over, right? Or certainly by the end of the third, I should say. So I think that's a problem. They don't have any death bowling.
Yeah, that is an issue. And we saw that issue come to the fore versus England.
Yeah, you know, we've seen this for a couple of years. Remember there was one game where Daryl Mitchell had to bowl with them at the death a couple of years ago in a World Cup, right? Like, you know, quite consistently they have struggled with death bowling. They've got a lot of new ball options. They don't have a lot of old ball options. Ish Sodhi can take wickets but go for, you know, a lot of runs at times as well. Phillips is not a frontline bowler. Ravindra is not a frontline bowler. They can both be really good on their day, but not on their day, they can both be horrendous. Neesham is probably a two overs a game guy. Like, there's a lot of, you know, those are things that have been around for a while. When it all works, what you end up with is 6 or 7 different bowling options available to you. Mm. When it doesn't work, you end up at the death hoping that Matt Henry can, or Lachie Ferguson can do all the work for you. And generally, the way their bowling works, they have to use Lachie Ferguson earlier. So it doesn't work as well for them anyway.
Perhaps what they should do, Jared, is use Lachie for like the 6th over in the power play, right? Because that is an over where teams will be looking to attack and Lachie could perhaps strike. Then I'd probably preserve the other 3 overs for the death, especially now that they've moved out of Sri Lanka, right? Like, that could
be a
joy.
But is he a great death bowler?
He does have a good slower one, but it's not as good as Lou Gingidi.
Yeah, I just think he's at his best in the middle. I think that's actually what Lachie Ferguson has always been best at. So I think you obviously want 1 or 2 overs at the death, and you know, from him in this lineup specifically. But I don't think it's like his best skill. His best skill is to be able to get wickets when no one else can get wickets in those middle overs, right? And making him into a death bowler, Matt Henry takes a good amount of wickets at the death, but can also get absolutely hammered. Duffy can't bowl at the death. Jameson can't bowl at the death. Neesham can't bowl at the death. Phillips now can't bowl at the death. Ravindra. Do you know what I mean? Like, there is an issue there that they either get really predictable at the death and that makes them weaker throughout the rest of the game, or they just have to throw random guys and hope it works on the day.
Yeah, and that random guy for the last 2 games has been Rachin Ravindra, 4 for 27 versus Sri Lanka, followed by 3 for 19 versus England. It's tough to explain, but those conditions really suited him at the Premadasa. He's not going to get them at the Eden Gardens, Jared. I fear that, you know... Spinners might get tonked in this particular ground, which means that New Zealand will have to play Jimmy Neesham as well, which does make them a bit under strength when compared to South Africa, because South Africa have most bases covered. Plus, we often speak of New Zealand as this process-driven side who are exceptionally good at, you know, optimally using their resources and also just planning in general. Mm-hmm. Like Ravi Shastri is on court somewhere mentioning how it was toughest to plan versus New Zealand. So you can expect them to be consistently good, but in the words of Rob Barron, it's tough to up the volatility when you are New Zealand, isn't it?
So I've done a piece.
How would you do that?
I've done a piece that'll come out tomorrow, where I've basically looked at, you know, all the players who've faced 750 balls in the last couple of years of T20 cricket around the world to see if different countries produce different styles of T20 batters. Hmm. Right. It is very clear that New Zealand produce anchors, right? And then they produce what I would call sort of normie batters, which are guys who don't chew up too many dot balls and hit like slightly above the amount of boundaries that you would expect, right? Finn Allen's the only one they have that really goes another way. Even someone like Glenn Phillips, who I think should be a Glenn Maxwell type player, has just never managed to do it consistently and is now more like an anchor than he is a top order. Daryl Mitchell, huge man, big strength. His best skill in T20 cricket is not facing any dot balls, right? Devin Conway was an anchor. Kane Williamson was the anchor's anchor, right? So the only person they really have that can up the volatility is Finn Allen. And I did a video or a tweet or something. I don't know. I did something. I did a piece, that's right, where I talked about if Finn Allen can do what he's done at the lower level in a World Cup, it actually makes their team so much more dynamic, because what they don't have, which all the other sides have, is someone who can just score at such a ridiculous rate that you can almost not win the game against them, right? So, you know, Phil Salt and Harry Brook and Abhishek Sharma and Ishan Kishan, like all the other sides, right? Daryl Brevis. Everyone has a guy like that that can just go bang, 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 you've lost the game, right? They don't have it because that's not how their players play. Even someone like Seaford, who's quite attacking, you look at his overall strike rate, it's fine, but it's not anything. Finn Allen can do that. So can Finn Allen face 30 balls against the South African bowlers? And that's always been my question with him. It's not that he can't do this at the lower level, but he struggles for consistency at the lower level, and I don't know if he can replicate it at the top level. If he can do it in one of the next two games, they might win a World Cup, right? But yeah. I don't know if I 100% believe it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And as Akshu pointed out, they have a fifth bowler issue in New Zealand. As Jared pointed out, they have a death bowler issue as well. And of course, you know, that batting lineup, as talented as it is, because I do think there are a lot of wonderful batters in there who are really, really capable.
It's not lacking talent.
Yeah. And they can be, you know, quite explosive on their day, but they probably do rely a bit too much on the opening batting pair. I know that Seifert, maybe his overall record isn't too, you know, pleasing, but in recent years, he's really kind of upped the ante. And Finn Allen, we know, is this firebrand sort of opener. So it is an underrated opening batting pair, Finn Allen and Tim Seifert. But then Rachin Ravindra at three is someone who doesn't convince me in T20s. The other formats is great, but in T20 eyes, I don't know, man. Rachin at three is a bit of a weak link.
Hey, I mean, he shouldn't be. I think he played at Chennai and they told him to go all out and slog. And he'd never really, if you have a look at his career, I'm pretty sure domestically in New Zealand, he didn't have a really strong T20 career. And I think they wanted him to go out and thrash because that made sense for their side, gave them a little bit more bowling, gave them a good fielder in the top order. Like, it made sense at that stage. And since then, I just don't know what Rachin Ravindra's T20 style is. He still, I suppose, just because of the talent that he has, like if you told me he made 80 off 30 in one of these next two games, I don't think I'd be gobsmacked, right? Because he can definitely do that. But he's, you know, he's 26 years old, right? So he's no longer the young player he was, and he averages 20 in T20 cricket, right? And it's a good strike rate. It's not a strike rate that justifies averaging 20 in T20 cricket, right? Like, it's 139 domestically and it's 135 internationally. He just hasn't made the runs. He's never made more than 70 runs in a T20 game. Talent is not the issue with him, right? It really is, can he do this? And that's why, at least with Finn Allen, we've seen recent history of him doing it. Whereas Rachin, we haven't even seen that, right? But those are the two guys that actually have the ability to win games for them. And one of them's never made any runs, and the other one has not really done it at the top level enough.
Yeah, I would add Glenn Phillips to the mix as well. I feel like he can be a proper match winner slash game changer. I agree that he probably hasn't been as consistent as he should have been, but I feel that he is that X factor sort of player, right? And he can give contributions all over the field. Like, even as a fielder alone, he can win you games. So he would be the X factor player for me. But then Daryl Mitchell is at 6, right? That is quite low. And in recent times, we've seen him start hitting the ball from ball one, but that's generally something he struggles to do. And Chapman is the left-hander in the middle order. So I think that if New Zealand are chasing a total with due around, then that makes them or puts them in a very good position to make the final. But it's going to be an uphill task to kind of defeat the South African team, which is the only unbeaten team remaining in the competition. And we've got a super chat about them. Samit Khan, big time Proteas fan. He says Proteas fan since 99 here. Oh my God, what a time to become a fan, right? I have only seen South Africa.
Does that say something about you as a human being? Right. I don't know where Samit was born, but those are not rands that he's given us. Right. So we can assume he was not born in South Africa. And so 1999, this man, Samit Khan, in front of us, made the decision that, having seen the biggest heartbreak of all time, that's like being rejected by a girl and then proposing to her. Right. Like, what are we even doing here, Samit?
But anyway, yeah, Samit has lived quite a life. I'm sure he really enjoyed the World Test Championship final where Temba lifted the mace. But that's pretty much it that he's enjoyed over the years, right? Like, that caps it. We're not counting that Champions Trophy, I'm sorry. And that was probably before 99 anyway.
What about Commonwealth gold? Commonwealth gold!
He says, I've only seen South Africa perfect the art of snatching defeat from victory, now unbeaten in 7 games in this T20 World Cup. Do I brace for the semi-final final implosion? Jared Behram, please tell me this is finally the year, I beg. They are set up really, really well to lift the trophy, and they have defeated India as well in this competition, which on paper is a better side than South Africa. But they are an informed team. They've got most bases covered, Samit. It's an explosive batting lineup, 1-6. I quite rate both Jansen and Corbin Bosch at 7 and 8. I know Jared has different feelings about them at 7 and 8.
You like guys who average 16, do you? What are we even talking about here?
They're muscular, athletic guys.
How can you rate someone who's never made any runs? I don't understand what we're talking about here.
They can clear the fence. They're decent insurance. And the bowling lineup.
Number 7 is not insurance in a knockout game if Jasper Bumrah is bowling to you. Do you know how I know that?
That's also fair.
Because they lost the last fucking World Cup because they had the same fucking batting order, right? They had Jansen at fucking 7 last time. And India were like, one more wicket and we get a chance here. Rishabh Pant went off to try and put some pressure on them. And next thing you know, they get a wicket. So it's still risky. I think the thing I would go in the favor of them is India has not been in full form. And the idea that India is suddenly going to find full form in the last two games is less likely, right? Like, they're just not like they're in that. South Africa looked like they're in full form, but because they have this weaker batting lineup that if you get 5 wickets, you put a lot of pressure on them. Knockout games are much more tense for them in the way that they play than they are for other teams, right? There isn't the same freedom that their batters have. So it means that they might play within themselves a little bit. And if they play within themselves, then obviously you can beat them. They're also, if this becomes a spin tournament from here on in, and we're not expecting it to be, but if it does, they're not particularly set up for that. And, you know, out of all the teams, Aidan Markram's going to have to bowl, what, 2 or 3 extra overs? Maybe George Linder played okay the other day, so maybe, batted okay. No, he bowled okay in the end.
Bowled okay as well, from what I remember.
But they don't want him in the lineup, right? They would rather not have him in the lineup. The problem is, as Varun said the other day, they've got 3 7.5 batters in Linder, Bosch, and Jansen, and they wish one of them could just be a number 6, right? Really? And they're having to stretch one of them to number 7 as well. That could be an issue for them. So there's ways that they can lose. Rabada hasn't had a very good tournament so far.
Yeah.
Marco Jansen's T20 bowling is still very, very up and down. Like, we all know what he can be as a bowler and as a batter one day. He'll be a number 7 one day. There's no doubt about that. Well, very little doubt about that. But he's very up and down. Ngidi might have to bowl on a day when there's a little bit more moisture around and it's hard for him to get the revolutions on it. Then he's just a fast medium bowler with a heavy ball, right? Like, he's not the same bowler in those kinds of situations. So there are many ways that they can lose from here. I think India is still the better side, but South Africa is in the better form. And New Zealand are a very experienced team. They don't have a lot of younger players, right? Most of their players would be old. They know what they're doing. New Zealand is very good at, as Ravi Shastri said, of kind of working out what to do against you to bring you to their level. And also, New Zealand is probably, out of these two teams, with Matt Henry taking the new ball, they're most likely to take the very early wickets, right, in this tournament. I'd have to go back and have a look, but to me, it looks like Matt Henry is going to take a wicket in the first over almost every time he's bowled, right? And that's generally one of the reasons that they win, they make so many semifinals and they're so good in World Cups is they take new ball wickets and that puts you under pressure in important games.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's been one of their strengths. Power play bowling for New Zealand across formats even. I mean, in ODI World Cups as well, they've taken new ball wickets and yeah, they had a really good run in Test cricket when Bolt and Saudi were going crazy along with Kyle Jameson. So that is definitely a strength that New Zealand possess, but you're right in the sense that when I look at holes in this South African team, 7-8 aside, let's put that discussion on the side, I do think that if they get a Turner, Maharaj, who hasn't been having a great World Cup either, would be left alone. And even if they bring George Linder in, that's two slow left armers, and Aidan Markram probably has to roll his hand over, so that's
they're
not ideal.
They're still not wicket-taking spinners either, are they? They're not. Yeah. They, you know, since Shamsi's gone, they haven't replaced that kind of bowler with another guy who you can throw overs to in the middle.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely fair. But I do think that this particular semi-final versus New Zealand spin isn't going to play much of a part.
Probably not.
They're just going to have to get or use Maharaj in a way where you are able to steal overs from him and then rely on your seamers to do the business. Jansen is interesting. On his day, he can absolutely wreck you. But when it's not his day, he can, you know, go for plenty of runs as well. He's like the Brad Evans of South Africa, right? Like, this is Brad Evans'
entire
career.
Everyone says that about him. Everyone is comparing him to Brad Evans. Look, I think I think the 7-8 thing, I'm less worried about them. Well, there's two issues here, right? One of them can come off. And so, as you said, they can clear the ropes and they could do that. I don't understand why Corbin Bosch has never made runs in T20 cricket, but that's a different conversation for another day. He's at number 8, so I'm not as worried. You basically have two Marco Jansens and you hope one of them comes off, right?
Basically,
fine.
Yeah.
The issue for South Africa, generally, if you look at the history of all their failures in white ball tournaments, is that their batters bat slower than they need to because they're worried about the lower order, or they just bat slower than they need to, fuck knows why. Right? As you know, you and I have gone through this before. Like some cases we couldn't come up. So you've got Lance Klusner coming in at number 9. You guys don't need to be 20 or 40 balls, guys. Right? But generally it's they bat too slow and they get themselves into a position where they kind of, you know, have to hit out and then they lose wickets. That's my issue with that, with where they've left themselves again. Look, I think it would be fair. You know, them and India are clearly the best two T20 sides over the last 2 years or whatever it's been since the last cycle, right? Yeah. If they each won one, I think that would be fair. But there are many ways that South Africa can fail here. The other thing is this, you know, of everything's about form. They have been the informed side. They may not be the informed side for the next two games. Like that's how... Yeah. Cricket works, right? Like that's how sport works. That's how life works. So there are lots of reasons why they may not come over. I just think they're a better team than New Zealand. And so unless a bunch of things go against them, I would expect to see South Africa in the final.
Yeah, likewise. And I mean, they had their tricky game versus Afghanistan as well, which they managed to win somehow after two super
overs. They won
it,
they lost it, they won it, they tied it, they won it, they lost it, they won it.
But just to give... friend Samit over here some confidence, I will say this, that top six of South Africa's is really, really scary, right? Like Quinton de Kock has come back to international cricket and he's been in form. Aidan Markram is South Africa's highest run scorer in this competition and amongst the top five run scorers overall, and he's looked really, really good when on song, as he usually does. Ryan Rickelton at 3 is a really phenomenal option to have. He's been quite explosive. And then you've got the likes of David Miller, Tristan Stubbs, Deewald Brevis, all of these guys, you know, they can hit big. So they shouldn't bat slow in these knockouts because they've got some insurance with the bat with those two Marco Jansens at 7 and 8. But that top six is more explosive than New Zealand. That's one thing that they do have in their favor. And even if Jansen is hot and cold and Rabada has been hot and cold throughout his career and he's not had a very good T20 World Cup, Lungisani Ngidi's dipping Magnus Force slow one has been unplayable. That's their main strength when it comes to bowling. And he's an early contender along with Will Jack's Ngidi for player of the tournament for me.
Maybe most improved player of the tournament, as in, you know, at least how we, you know, most surprising star of the tournament. But yeah.
Yeah.
The batting is, Quinton de Kock batting the way he has been recently is obviously working. I think he's been underperforming in T20 cricket for years. I think anyone who's ever followed my stuff will know that I don't understand why he hasn't been more dominant. I think Rickleton is the better version of what Quinton de Kock is. And so having the two of them there is really, really handy. It's not what I don't think they can do consistently is what England and India can do, which is probably score the 30 to 40 plus totals, right? Mm. Where you basically don't, doesn't matter what you bowl, Jacob Bethel come and have a bowl and you're probably still going to win. And I think that's the big difference. But compared to, because they match up against New Zealand, that doesn't matter as much, right? Against New Zealand, they sort of just have to bat normally and back their bowlers. And unless something goes horribly wrong with Matt Henry in the new ball, or Mitch Santner is unplayable for a period, or Lockie goes on a run, they really shouldn't get themselves into any trouble in this game. Conditions can change that. Toss can change that. A couple of drops can change that. But realistically, they do have the better team on paper. I think it'd be hard to argue that.
Yeah. I mean, New Zealand have been better in the field, though, than South Africa. South Africa has been, they've been dropping some really ridiculous chances. Mm. So that perhaps is a weakness. But generally, both these sides are phenomenal fielding sides, you know, throughout their history. And I do think, like, South Africa have a really, very decent fifth bowler in Corbin Bosch, which is an area where New Zealand struggle. But then
Corbin Bosch has been bowling really, really well. And Aidan Markram has bowled some good spells as well for them, right? Mm. And he hasn't had to be overbowled the way that Glenn Phillips has to be overbowled. So
yeah.
I think that I like that and I understand it. I think they would feel much more comfortable if Corbin Bosch was good enough to bat at number seven and make runs. They must be as confused as the rest of us why he's never made any runs in T20 cricket. But I do think we're in a situation where they just look a little bit more rounded. It's only if spin plays a bigger part where you start to go, how do they get themselves out of this?
Yeah, I mean, Have you read the Corbin Bosch story, the life story, Tertius Bosch's story?
I know about his father. I'm pretty sure you mentioned this the last time he was around as well. Yeah, for those who haven't, go and find the story about his father. It's a true crime story. I don't know if it's been made into a movie or anything at the moment, or a documentary, but I know they love their true crime stories in South Africa, and it is an absolute banger, especially because his son might go on to win a World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely recommend the story to Netflix if they want to make a show around it. But
we are available to make that movie if required.
Absolutely. I can play the role of Tertius. Anyway, so I suppose I'll end this segment where it started. I do feel the toss will be important, but let's have some predictions, shall we, Jared? I'm leaning towards South Africa. I feel like they should win this game.
Oh, yeah, South Africa, without a doubt.
Yeah. All right, then. There's one more semi-final to preview. But before that, we shall be taking a short ad break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Behram and Jared. And go nowhere, because we will be back very, very shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we just previewed the South Africa-New Zealand semi-final, which is tomorrow at the Eden Gardens in Kolkata. Now it's time to preview the other big semi, India versus England at the Wankhede Stadium in Mumbai. And this is quite an interesting one because India haven't particularly played their best cricket in this T20 World Cup. We know that they haven't gotten close to fulfilling their true potential. Varun Chakravarti has gone for runs in the Super 8s. Bumrah is still going for sixes, even though he was elite versus South Africa. And then there's the big question, Jared, and I suppose we should start this from here. We have seen turn at the Wankhede. England aren't really good at playing spin. Is it the perfect game to bring Kuldeep Yadav in for Ashdeep Singh?
It's a good question, actually. I've been thinking about that a lot. I probably think with Ashdeep's recent form, was it last game or the game before? I wonder if
it
I
was
would
the
just
last
roll.
Game.
Yeah, it was the last game. I wonder if I would just roll with him and just go that way. I think that you. I don't think there's a wrong answer until the game goes in the wrong direction, if that makes sense. I think you can go in either direction. But I do think if you've got Akshar and you've got Varun, I think that's enough spin to get England in trouble anyway. And if it's really turning, which I don't expect it to, but let's say it's really turning, you can probably get away with the Tilak over, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and then that you get yourself up to 10 overs a spin. I don't know. You could always bring Washington in as well if you really were worried about that and you want to go in that direction. I just there's something about Hardik being your second seamer that has always made me feel a little bit nervous. Unless it's a proper spinning wicket. If it was ragging sideways, I'd feel more comfortable with that. But I just think if you've got Akshar and you've got Varun in the side, do you really want the third spinner unless you're positive it's going to change the entire direction of the game?
Let me play devil's advocate over here, right? Now, Arshdeep Singh, he was really, really good in those first two Super 8 games. Great at the power play, great at the death. Good top end games, two of them for him. In the last game versus the West Indies, he goes for plenty. At one point, he goes for 22 runs and three balls, essentially, right? Oh, five wide, six wide, six, four. That's how that went. And England are a batting unit which do not spare seamers at the death. The Wankhede is a venue where seamers aren't spared at the death anyway. You combine those things, and that's why I personally am leaning towards Kuldeep.
Who do you bowl?
But I will acknowledge one thing.
Who do you bowl at the death then in that game if Arshdeep doesn't play?
Yeah, that is a big question.
That's my point, right? Because then you go back to Hardik, who's also got hammered at the death at times, right? Also, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure doesn't Phil Salt play Arshdeep absolutely horrendously?
Oh, well, he does have an issue sometimes between against left-arm quicks, right? Remember all those years ago when you and I did a piece or a footmarks on right-hand bowler bashes, something like that? Phil Salt was top of that list.
I think Phil Salt specifically struggles against Arshdeep, even within that. I could be wrong. I might be misremembering it. But, look, I think you have to take wickets against England all the way through. And I think your best chance of taking wickets is generally with the new ball, and he's their best new ball bowler, right? Like, he's the one most likely to take wickets in the first and third overs. It also means that you can use Bumrah when he's best suited, whereas if you don't, if you don't do that, you have to stretch him to the top and the tail a little bit more like a traditional bowler. Again, I'm not saying these are bad options. I also like the idea of bringing in Kuldeep, but I kind of, if you're going to do that, I almost wish that they had a second. Is that a situation where Shivam Dubey has to bowl, right? And if Shivam Dubey has to bowl, what are his two overs going against, you know, Brook or Salt or Jax?
With the threat level of 84, if he manages to pitch if he manages to pitch the ball on the actual surface, he might go for 30 runs in his two overs, right? So, like, I get what you're saying.
So I just think that's where you leave yourself a little bit naked. It's different if it's a proper ragging wicket, right? Like some of the wickets we've seen. We saw that when they were in the Champions Trophy, right? Where I think you could go with those lineups. I'm not sure we're going to see that. I think what you're saying is it might favour the spin a little bit more than pace. I think you've already got the best eight overs of spin are probably still going to be bowled on India's side. Right? So do you not just back your two spinners against England's two spinners in that case?
Yeah. No, I see where you're coming from. And it's a really interesting debate to have as well, because the one thing I do acknowledge is that when Arshdeep plays ahead of Kuldeep, Bumrah's utility and usage is much better, right? Yeah. You can use him in proper phases, whereas when Arshdeep isn't playing, then Jasprit Bumrah takes the new ball with Hardik Pandya and then you save an over or two towards the death. And we've seen Sky even give Bumrah three power play overs when they've gone with that formation, right? The Asia Cup comes to mind where he did that quite frequently. So that is a dilemma that India have to solve in preparation for this big game. And Rinku's out of the team recently. Tilak's been doing well. He was India's second best batter versus the West Indies after Sanju Samson. And
I mean, that's quite a drop.
Yeah, it is.
He was their second best batter.
It is quite a drop. But he also scored an unbeaten 44 off 16, Tilak, before that. Look, India have had this weird tournament where every game there's been one or two batters which have bailed them out, right? If you start with the USA game, it was Sky. He was the difference between both teams and USA's catching or catchers as well. They dropped a fair few. And after that, we had Ishan and Hardik do well versus Namibia. Ishan alone was the savior versus Pakistan. In the Netherlands game, it was Dubey, right? And then they flunked as a group versus South Africa. Zimbabwe, everyone came good. Pretty much everyone got runs. And now in their most recent game, it was a Sanju Samson bailout. So the good thing is that one guy is always there to bail them out. The bad thing is they aren't quite coming to the party collectively as a unit too frequently.
The one thing I would say is, like, it is actually, it's not one guy. So this isn't like Shane Watson in 2012 for Australia, right?
Hmm.
What it is Sky's played a good innings, Ishan's played a good innings, Abhishek's played a good innings, Sanju's played a good innings, and Shivam Dubé. Has Hardik as well? I can't remember if Hardik.
Yeah, Hardik's scored a couple of 50s.
Right. So if I'm looking at that from an analyst perspective, I'm like, the form isn't the issue here, right? It's just that we haven't managed to have a couple of games together, but those one guys have been so good, we've often still won games, right? So if I'm looking at it from that perspective, I'm not as worried. I'd be more concerned if it was like Brian Bennett and Sikander Raza. Where you're just like, yeah, one guy's saving us, but it's the same two guys over and over again and no one else can bat. That would worry me. This doesn't worry me at all.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they're not all in form at the same time is not ideal, but I'm not sitting there going, oh no, like they've all played, like five of them or six of them have played really good World Cup knocks so far.
Yeah, everyone has pitched in at some point. Even Abhishek, who was accumulating ducks for fun at the start. I mean, he had faced eight deliveries in the group stages. He was dismissed thrice and he hadn't scored a run. But you expect that with Abhishek. It was bound to happen at some point. He did score a slowish 50 by his standards versus Zimbabwe. A lot of people want him dropped for the knockouts, but I think that's a stupid idea because surely you keep him around. He's Abhishek Sharma. India's fielding has been rather poor. They've been one of the poorer fielding sides, right? They've dropped plenty of catches, and it's happened in games with which they've won already. It's happened in games where they really need to catch those, you know, catches, not drop them. So I feel like that is a weakness. But other than that, like, I don't know, man. Maybe Rinku makes more sense over Tilak from a role perspective, but Tilak's been doing well as well now. So I don't think he'll get dropped. India should win this game. They should steamroll England. But England are a team which have a very high standard of deviation, right? Like, they can be really shit. And if their batting clicks, they can be quite good. And both the West Indies and England, if they wanted to stand a chance to defeat India, they had to outbat India. The good thing is for England is that they've got a slightly better bowling attack than the West Indies. And I think that helps them.
Yeah. Look, England have lots of players who can win games. They are not built in the same way that New Zealand or South Africa are built. They're very different kinds of team. Very different kind of team. They have plenty. If you wanted me to go through all the holes within England's cricket, like there's plenty of them, right? They don't have a full five-man attack that you would be comfortable in a World Cup semi-final. They've got bad form in all sorts of situations, most specifically at the top of the order, which is not ideal. Yeah. They're being held together by a guy who's never played this role before, who seems to be having the tournament of a lifetime. And they haven't always played very good cricket. Like, when we talked about India not being in good form, England's been in really patchy form in this tournament as well at times.
Yeah.
But then Sam Curran bowls a good over, or Will Jacks comes in. You know, Adil Rashid takes a bunch of, you know, is unplayable for a couple of minutes. Jofra does well. As a team, they have not looked, they don't even look like they're all playing the same sport at times. But somehow they're moving forward a little bit. So I would say they're an incredibly flawed team that can beat you in multiple ways. And most probably is going to be with the bat, as you said before. Yeah. But you have to, the one thing I would say is, with England, and we've seen this all tournament through with them, really, is you just have to bowl them out. In that game against Sri Lanka, when they had their biggest failure, Sri Lanka just pulled back and went, oh, they're not going to make that many runs now. No, with England, you have to bowl them out because they do bat deeper than other sides. And that is something that you have to keep in mind all the way through.
Yeah. I mean, England's number 11 is Adil Rashid, who's got how many first-class hundreds? Quite a few, from what I recall. And they've brought Rehan Ahmed into the side as well, who did really well versus New Zealand. But I don't think he plays
in this game.
Really? It'll be tough to drop him. But yeah, Jamie Overton's probably the guy they're looking at ahead of Rehan if he doesn't play in this game. But what I find truly fascinating about England is that when we were watching the group stages, they were extremely dodgy, right? Like, they should have lost to Nepal, but they didn't. Yep. Sam Curran's final over saved them and Will Jackson's batting.
Yep. Should have lost to Sri Lanka.
Yeah, they should have lost to Sri Lanka as well, but somehow Sri Lanka managed to put on one of the worst batting performances in the second innings in this entire competition.
Sri Lanka just ruined, I don't know how Sri Lanka lost that game and lost it by so much.
True. But yeah, I mean, look, the Italy game, it was another Will Jacks performance with the bat and the death overs, which saved them. And they lost to the West Indies, right? Scotland, they had moments where they looked quite iffy. But come Super 8s, they've problem solved. They've even lost tosses and that hasn't mattered. And again, Will Jacks has been Klusnering it, as we have been calling it, or Rob Barron, as he's coined the term. He's bleached New Zealand in the previous game, right? Him and Rehan Ahmed really kind of fired up towards the end and got England an unlikely victory. But I do think that at some point, either this runs out or this turns into something even more magnificent, right? Like, there is no in-between over here. I don't think we're going to get a close-ish game in this semi. Either England are going to pull off something that we can't even imagine they're capable of. Like, maybe they'll score 80 runs in the power play. Butler finally clicks alongside Salt. Or India just going to completely, like, stomp over all of their dreams. Because that's the mismatch when it comes to, you know, how the teams stack up against each other. India are far more stronger than England. But I do like the fact that it's a volatile team and you can expect anything from them. That kind of adds to the flavor of this particular contest.
It's probably either India get on top of them really early on, or it could be very messy, right? And that's kind of what England do against you. It's funny, this chat here says, England on 1KD, much better team than India. Hales? Not sure Hales is going to get a game. I think he lives in Dubai. I'm not even sure he can fly out there at the moment.
Are you talking about actual hailstorm Hales?
Brooke Archer, Rashid. India is media hyped. I mean, India is a fantastic team. I don't know what that means. Yeah. West Indies, only good team they've beaten. England lost to the West Indies, dude. So, like, when you say things like that, look, I think there's advantages with rest. I think this is, again, traditionally, this is probably where England would want to play India. I'm not sure they specifically want to play them there if it's spinning a bit more right at the moment. But I think if they were picking pre-tournament, this is the place that they would have probably tried to play them there. So there's some advantages, but there's so many disadvantages when you look at this England side and everything else. So I do think from that perspective, India is pretty solid favourites, but not as much as I think they're. South Africa is favourites against New Zealand and India's just slightly more favorited against England. So I think there are a lot of people going, well, actually, India's not in form and they didn't play great cricket against the West Indies the other day. And they've had a bit of I think luck's the wrong way of looking at it, but they've had one guy kind of stand up at the right time over and over again. If they keep depending on that, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's going to be any dew in this game. I haven't seen dew at the 1KD yet, so hopefully that makes this a more even contest. But I agree that England would like to face India at the 1KD, but Jasprit Bumrah plays his home cricket in the IPL at the 1KD, so does Surya Kumar Yadav. And if Bumrah goes on a tear, then that might be it for England, right? He's that level of bowler. I think, yeah, maybe Butler is due a score now. He definitely is due a score. Maybe it comes in this game. And then him and Salt, if they can provide a platform for England to get to 200+, that makes things really interesting. Because India in a knockout game, chasing a big total where there is no due, even if the bowling isn't as good, you've still got Jofra and Adil Rashid, even if they haven't had the best of tournaments. You've got those guys, right? It could end up being like one of those games where India is under heaps of pressure. But that is the only way I feel England can challenge them. England chasing a target. I mean, they couldn't chase a target versus the West Indies either at the 1KD, right? I'm a bit iffy over there.
Yes, I think, look, I think it would be hard to be that worried about those things, but they all have to be mentioned.
Anyway, there's another super chat over here by Blue Eagles who says, in addition to their schedule advantage, Archer matches up well with India's top order and the entry points don't pit Dubey or Akshar versus spin barring a collapse. England will face South Africa at the Sunny Dome on Sunday. Look, I still feel like it'll be a South Africa-India final, although it is a volatile format as well. Anything can happen. But there are ways in which England can defeat India. Are they odds-on favourites? Absolutely not, man. I don't know why people are underrating India so much, even if they haven't had the perfect game. They are still a far better side than England.
Yeah, I can tell you they're absolutely not odds-on favourites. There's quite a bit of value if you want to bet England here. So the vast majority of people are definitely looking at it from the other perspective. Look, Archer matches up well against the top order, but if he gets hammered for a couple of fours or sixes early on, what's plan B? Plan B is Adil Rashid, who traditionally bowls a little bit too slow in India, and Indian players with their feet are going to be able to get to him better than anyone else. What's plan C?
Plan C is Will Jacks.
plan C is probably Sam Curran at the death and hoping that works, right?
Like, true.
It's, there are plenty. I mean, this is not a very strong side from England. As we said, it's got this kind of core of kind of match winners that are kind of overcoming the fact that bad form, the fact they might have to pick Overton, that, you know, the fact that they don't really have death bowling if Sam Curran doesn't work. You know, there's lots of various issues throughout this side, but it bats really deep and they have multiple bowling options. So yeah, it can go in, it can swing so wildly in either direction. But this is not a side who has looked like we're not talking about South Africa's form here. We're talking about England, who I've been, as I said, there are two games off the top of my head that they have won that they have, if they had gone out in the Super 8s like Australia did, I would not have been massively surprised by the cricket that they were playing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable how they have gone unbeaten in those Super 8 games. And Harry Brook, I mean, he scored that ton versus Pakistan. That was an all-timer knock. Him and Sanju, they've played the best two knocks that we've seen in this competition. And Brook now has promoted himself to number three. I think that kind of works because he gets to face pace early on and he can kind of dominate it. And then you've got what? Banton, Bethel, Sam Curran. They bat deep, Jared, but it's not like they have heaps of quality. Will Jacks is probably the next big thing coming in at number seven or whatever.
No, exactly. And you know, the Nepal game was obviously early on, so let's move on from that a little bit. They came back well in the Sri Lanka game, even if Sri Lanka played a part. But even that England game, the New Zealand game, they should have lost that as well. Like, I mean, that's three games. So if we're sitting here saying, oh, India has all these concerns, well, fucking England has every single concern and isn't as good on paper. So what are we actually saying? So how are people making any argument that England is the favourite? They're not as good on paper. They've got the rest advantage, as people have said. I think that's fair. This is probably the ground that they wanted to play India. That's not going to bother India all that much. It's just a slightly better matchup for them. They have a bunch of match winners. They have a terrible, opening form partnership at the moment. Plenty of questions when it comes to England, right? Like Banton, Brook batting at number three is like he's played one innings. Generally, he quite often plays one innings and then we don't see him for a while in T20 cricket. He hasn't quite worked out T20 cricket. There's so many questions on this England side that to think that they are favourites based on this tournament means you haven't been watching England play, because you could not be watching England play and say they should be favourites against India in India with this form.
Yeah, especially like, you know, we spoke about how Bumrah could be a real headache given that he plays his home cricket at the Wankhede in the IPL. But Varun is the sort of bowler that I don't even know how England will play him, right? Like, they should be watching those videos of David Miller taking him down, perhaps, or Hetmyer to learn a thing or two. But I agree with Jared in the sense that this is also another team, England, who have not been in top form. They've problem-solved well, but they've just snuck over the line in many of these games. And India is going to be a task in three quarters. That is a mammoth contest, which, you know, where the odds are stacked heavily against England. So let's see how they kind of turn up. I just want to ask you, Jared, before we move on to the Super Chats, that you mentioned you'd bring in Overton for Rehan. Any other changes? Would you probably...
I'm not saying I would bring in Overton for Rehan. I'd just be surprised if they played Rehan. I just think that the Indians will be pretty happy to face him. He batted really well against New Zealand, so I think we'll give them that. That's the only reason I'd be bringing that up.
They have a lot of spin bowling all-rounders over here if they play Rehan. They've got Dawson as well, Rehan and Will Jacks, right? Jacob Bethel. There are a lot of those similar kinds of bowlers. And then when you come to seamer options or seam bowling options, there's Jofra, there's Sam Curran. And you're probably looking at Overton, right? Because Luke Wood played one game and he was really bad in that game. So,
it's the similar question than you said before. It's just not the similar kind of bowlers. It's the two all-rounders being changed for each other, whereas with India, it's the two specialists.
Yeah. But my question is it too late to bring Ben Duckett into the fold? Because I feel like he could be a handful.
I don't think they're going to change their batting lineup, are they? Who would you drop? Bethel?
I don't think so. Banton?
Or one of the openers?
Maybe Butler, or move Butler down.
I actually think Banton's looked okay in this tournament.
Yeah, Banton hasn't been bad.
He hasn't made a lot of runs, I should say, but I think he's looked okay. I would probably, if they're going to bat Bethel at number four, unless they're going to bowl him, I kind of think Duckett makes more sense in that role. But I don't think we're going to see that change.
Anyway, moving on to the Super Chats, we've got Shiva Subramaniam who says, Jared, then you should ask about a person's decision to become an Indian fan after the 2011 World Cup, 10 years of continuous heartbreak. But they won the 2011 World Cup.
They were the number one test team in the world for a while there. They had the most...
They won the Champions Trophy in 2013.
They had the best home record in one of the best home records in the history of cricket. If you're comparing that to South Africa, you need to read a book.
They defeated Australia twice in Test cricket in Australia.
Also, didn't have anyone who sent a question in about becoming an Indian fan, right?
Yeah.
We had a person who sent a question in about being a South African fan. And
That Indian fan who becomes a fan after the 2011 World Cup would have had a good decade.
I was going to say, that would be a great decade. Every South African fan in the world would exchange their decades for that one decade.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. We've got Samit Khan once again, who says, in football, when top teams grind out ugly wins, we call it the mark of champions. Can the same apply to England? They haven't been dominant, but they keep finding a way. Is this champion DNA or just papering over the cracks? You are talking about the Pakistan phenomena of peaking at the last minute when things aren't going well for you and then winning the goddamn competition. That doesn't happen every day.
Well, what I don't understand is, haven't India done ugly wins?
True.
Haven't they been finding a way to get over the line despite not playing well? So why is this an England thing and not an Indian thing? Look, what we are talking about is they could have easily lost that game to Nepal with an outside edge, right?
Yeah.
They could have easily lost the game against New Zealand if Rehan Ahmed comes in and hits the first ball straight up in the air and gets caught, right? The Sri Lanka one, I will give them credit, even though Sri Lanka played a big part in it. I will give them 100% of credit. So there are, cricket is much less like football, and cricket, and don't get me things with like mark of champions and whatever, but cricket is much more like basketball, right? Where you have, T20 cricket, I should say, where you have a lot of games that are kind of coin tosses towards the end, right? Sam Curran oversteps, someone drops a catch, whatever, and it goes completely in the other direction. Football doesn't quite work in the same way, right? Over the period of the full 90 minutes, right? It works in a slightly different way. And so sometimes you just have to be realistic and be like, well, this team isn't in great form, but they have won these close games that easily could have gone against them, right? And that's what we are saying. We're looking at South Africa and we're going, that is very good form. And we're looking at India and England and we're like, well, they found ways to win, but there are massive question marks over their form. What would you prefer, Samit, coming into a final? A team that is all playing good and doesn't seem to have any major weaknesses at the moment that have been exposed, or another team where you've had individual performances from random guys who've got you over the line over and over again? Because I can tell you which one anyone who works in cricket would prefer to have, and it isn't your one.
Yeah, well, without Will Jacks, England wouldn't even be here. I feel like he is the reason why they're in the semi-finals. And the one good thing that I will say with respect to their mindset, at least based on what Will Jacks said, is that when we have the perfect game, I will not be needed. And he is right, because they need his role to come off for them to get over the line. And if they play well, they wouldn't need Will Jackson.
Just so you're aware, I don't have a lot of time because I've got to pick up Clem. So.
Okay. Well, let's speed through these. Harjinder says, how much impact Toss will play in the India-England semi-final? If there's no due, then I don't think there'll be much of an impact with the Toss. Kurt's manager says, my contribution to offset Pakistan player fines, Behram, please do a favor and hand deliver.
Yeah, can you just give that out to everyone in case they're struggling? Yeah.
That requires a separate podcast. Draconian bullshit. Rohit Kumar Jha says, hoping Behram's safe after calling out the PCB fine. I've been calling out the PCB as long as I've been on Combox, buddy. Even before it was Combox and it was Good Areas. I'm in one piece in front of you. Yeah. Before it was Good Areas as well, I've been calling out the PCB. So don't think there's any issue over there. SPV90 says, I'll go with Linda over Maharaj because he can really bat and make quick runs and he'll come in at 7 if he plays. He can bowl well.
They can't all bat at fucking 7.
Yeah. Now, Maharaj is the better bowler. I think I'd still go with Keshav.
Yeah, Linda's just not that level of bowler. So I suppose it just depends on how they feel about the bowling, but I'd be shocked if they go in that direction. As I said, he played well the other day.
Yeah. Anshul Pandey says, Toss will play a major role in all three matches now. See, Kolkata, yes, because we've seen Dew in the second innings. I can't say the same for the other two games. Ahmedabad and Mumbai haven't seen a lot of Dew, have they?
Not so far, no. I mean, things can change. Look, it's T20 cricket and the toss often plays a big part. That's just a thing.
Yeah. All right. Corner taken quickly says, for Jofra and Jax, the real spin shady. Those matchups, do India need to tinker entry points of their batters a bit? Well, they can't tinker the openers, can they? Jofra's been funny. He was really poor at the start. And after that, he hasn't lit the world on fire, but his first two overs have been really good.
Yeah. He's bowled some good micro spells so far.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change the batting order all that much, I think. I think I'd just go with it. As I said, this England bowling lineup, it's not like you're going up against South Africa's bowling lineup, right? Yeah. You're going up against a lineup that is very, very damaged itself. So I think you just play to your strengths and you hope Jofra doesn't go on a day. But that can happen. That can happen with Henry. That can happen with Rabada. Like, any of the opening bowlers can do that to you. At this stage in the tournament, Ashdeep on through all four of the guys who are going to bowl the first over can win the game.
Yeah. Also, if England do have wickets in hand, they can go absolutely berserk into the death overs. India will have to keep that in mind. Info, no, it says, I meant salt. Oh, instead of hails. Yeah. Understood. I feel with Wankhede true bounce, end power hitter can hit through the line. That's true. England have played all games in Sri Lanka. In India, Butler, Brooks, salt will destroy Ashdeep Pandya. Let's meet on the 5th of the
But night. Here's the other thing about that. If you want to make that claim, they've also been playing on Sri Lankan surfaces and they're about to go on a very different kind of surface where India has been playing on Indian surfaces, right? Mm-hmm. So who's more used to it right at the moment? You've got to factor all those things in if you know, if that's the way you're looking at these things.
Agreed. All right. So how many more do we have, Muku? Bring them up.
No, it's me. Sorry. There you go.
Oh, it's you. Chirag Gupta says, Rehan over Dawson. Don't need a left-arm spinner against India, especially with how West Indian spinners did recently. Rehan can also hit Varun Chakravarti. They won't drop Dawson.
That's an interesting one for me. I was kind of thinking the same. They really like Dawson, and I'd be shocked now. They've waited, what? Hasn't Dawson been in like 5 World Cup squads without ever playing a game? It'd be hilarious if they got him all the way here, and then they went, actually, we've decided we were wrong all along. So I don't think that's going to happen. But I can see the logic behind this, but Rehan will go for more runs than Dawson, I would have thought. Rehan is not even a frontline spinner. Dawson is a specialist spinner who happens to be a batter in first-class cricket.
Also, Dawson can give them power play overs, buddy. I think they need a couple of those from him, right? So they'll be thinking along those lines. Jitendra Beeson says, Indians are scared because of ODI World Cup 2023, hence doubt.
No, they're scared because they haven't been in form, right? They just won a World Cup. They just won a bunch of different trophies. What are we talking about here? Indian fans are scared because all fans are scared when they're expected to win a tournament. That's the worst place to be in. You want to be second favourites. India's problem for the next decade is they will probably always be favourites. And I could say this as an Australian. We went in 1999, we were like, we're going to lose this. 2003, we're like, we can't win this. 2007 was the most nervous I've been. And Australia was absolutely blitzed everyone for the first ball, right? Australia lost a series against England before that 2007 World Cup, right? Ed Joyce made runs against them, right? Sorry, Ed. I didn't mean to sound like that was slandering you. But the point being is, like, when you're the favourite team, all you can see is how you won't win, right? When you're the second or third favourite team, you're like, well, we've got a chance. We've got a good team. Actually, I think, you know, we'll do okay here. This is not an Indian thing, mate. This is not about, like, the 2023 curse or anything. This is just how sports fans work.
Yeah, well, there is that whole curse, right, which some fans take really seriously of playing the final in Ahmedabad. But again, there's no causation equals correlation over here, guys. This is your head playing
India
mind games.
India would have to play
you.
10 finals in India.
Yeah.
Sorry, in Ahmedabad, for us to be able to check this scientifically.
Yeah. One day there'll be a foot marks on this, Jared, when we're both like closer to our deathbeds. Anyway, that wraps up all the super chats, doesn't it?
We're done.
All right. Well, thank you guys for all of your questions, interactions, and your super chats. They definitely do mean a lot. And best of luck to all of the fans for their games in the upcoming days. Indian, South African, English, and New Zealand fans, because these are going to be some very, very big knockout games. And we hope that they're entertaining as well. Of course, as always, follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, subscribe, do all of those things. And we will be back once again after the first semi-final tomorrow, live on Combox. Till then, you guys take care, have fun, enjoy yourselves, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.